Podtacular episode 312, Making Prometheans Covenant Weapons, for September 20th, 2012. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
I'm Daffling.
I'm Brent Gamer.
And we are here to talk about some of the nice Halo stuff coming out of the bulletins for the last 2 weeks, because last week we had the Halo Council on, and believe it or not, they are now our most downloaded show, at least while I've been doing it. So I just checked the stats, and from last week they have over 30,000 downloads.
So I think BS Angel tweeted something about it, didn't she?
She did. It actually got on Waypoint, yeah. And it got tweeted out, so it's done very well, needless to say. Breaking our previous record, which was with Green Skull and Jackfire Dragon talking about the Railgun when it first made its appearance. Now it's episode 287. So we have a new record in the books, which is 311. Over 30,000 downloads. That's a lot of downloads.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to, like, last summer when our average was 3,000.
Like, last show when I showed up, like, 2. And one of those downloads were mine.
No, nah, we've always had, like, at least 1,000 or so ever since I picked it up. But it's nice to see that it's gaining momentum. Well, it pretty much has momentum now.
So. Are we popular yet?
I think we're popular.
Can we sit with the popular kids at the Halo table?
I think we can. We can. But at the popular table with the rest of the Halo kids, there is some information about the Prometheans and the Covenant weapons, as you might have heard from the title of the show.
Ooh.
I know. So from the bulletin from two weeks ago for the bulletin, we had the making of Halo 4. Return of the Forerunners. So we got, if you were at PAX or if you watched the video that we put up initially, or the one that they put up a few days after PAX was over, we had the making of Halo 4, the first part, where they went into kind of the history behind Chief, and they basically went into all the aspects, like the story behind Chief and Cortana, the actual acting that went into going into the game for Chief and some other the human characters, the modeling behind it and what they did to really kind of spruce up his armor. So we get the same kind of thing for the Forerunners in this video, and it's 10 and a half minutes long, talking about everything about the Forerunners, kind of going back through the history of Halo 3 and ODST, where we see some of the Forerunner artifacts coming to life, especially in Halo 3 when we're on the Ark. So that's really where the story kind of heightens, because we have the terminals where we get to see some of the backstory of the Forerunners, and we get to see a lot of the other Forerunner technology that's going on from this ancient civilization of a long and distant past. So what do you guys think of the kind of how they portrayed the Prometheans as in this video? Let's start off with that. Let's just start off with a general impression of the Prometheans being the new enemy that we're going to have to be facing in Halo 4.
Yeah, so the Prometheans are especially important to 343, because that's essentially where they're going to separate themselves from Bungie as far as the Halo campaign goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bungie made the Covenant. The Covenant are still in there, but Bungie defined what the Covenant is, the enemies there. They're not going to change that stuff up. But they have full creative control over who the Prometheans are, what their designs are, what they want them to be. Even in the video, they said that they wanted to break away from how the Forerunners were kind of portrayed in the original Halos.
Right.
I mean, as far as just real vertical lines, steel walls, you know, glowing orange stuff.
Very structured and energetic.
That's still in there, but now you have the Prometheans who, they have like feral kind of characteristics. They're animalistic. like they said in the video.
Well, they're like a warrior class of Forerunner, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually didn't like the design of the knights until I learned that the Watchers actually come out of the knights' back. Thought that was kind of cool. So the knights carry the Watchers around, and then the Watchers support the knights. They can resurrect the knights, heal them during battle. So they're basically like the TF2 medics of Halo 4. So shoot the Watchers first. Pro tip.
Right. The interesting about that, what you just said, though, is they resurrect the knights.
Yeah, I think I saw in the video where they actually resurrected a knight.
So apparently, and this is something that I overheard, when if you go back and watch the Spartan Ops mission that I recorded during PAX, there was a little sidebar conversation. You may be able to hear it in the video. But apparently the Watchers can go over where a knight was killed or disintegrated and basically pull back all the little pieces that made the knight together. And it looks like it takes about maybe 5 to 7 seconds for it to fully rematerialize. But a Watcher can go back and basically pull all the little bits that make up the knight and resurrect him from the dead, which is...
Rise from your grave! Exactly. That was an Altered Beast reference. You're welcome.
This is not your grave.
Never mind. Anyways. Yeah.
I hope they do that. I hope they bring in the Gravemind's voice every time that happens. This is not your grave.
Every time you die in
but
the matchmaking game.
But you are welcome in it.
Or whatever.
Or during the Spartan Ops mission.
Yeah.
Well, we don't... I mean, they haven't... I can't remember if they said there's not going to be any flood in there, or they just haven't said anything specific to it yet. But I think as far as we know, there's not going to be any flood in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw it something like in maybe late Halo 5 or Halo 6. Because, I mean, the flood is pretty much what killed off all the Forerunners. So, it's still around. The flood's still on the Halos. We didn't eradicate them all when we set off the Ark. We just eradicated what was local to the Ark. So there's still flood in the galaxy. And if the Covenant was able to find us, there's more than likely that the Covenant or the flood are going to be well on their way as well.
You got to save something for Halo 5 and 6, you know?
Exactly. Although the Promethean enemies do make a formidable opponent in playing the campaign, and it looks like Spartan Ops are going to be pretty hefty too. They did say in the video that the Knights are actually made to be a little stronger than the Elites from the base class of the Knights. So each of the Promethean enemies has a class structure. So from the Knights, what we saw was basically 4 different classes. There's still no good indication on what the different colors mean. My best guess would be probably different societies of knights, because some of them are glowing blue, some of them are glowing orange, so we don't really know what that exactly means. But if you look in the video, it's on the bulletin for our September 12th, and it's also on Halo Waypoint's YouTube, if you haven't seen it yet.
That honestly sounds a little insane. Like the most basic knight being stronger than your average elite, and then it's only going to get harder as it goes up and up. Like, these things sound kind of, you know, insane. Like, especially if there's like multiple of them, like on legendary, like, oh, have fun with that, you know.
Yeah, and they can like teleport wherever they want to.
Yeah,
just zap out of space and like phase out.
They really got to make Chief like amazing or something.
The phasing, though, from all the gameplay we've seen in Spartan Ops, the campaign demos, and even the clips in this video, it seems very predictable on where they're teleporting to, because it's a straight line.
What doesn't make sense to me is, if they can teleport, why don't they teleport behind the Chief and just assassinate him?
Because that'd be too easy.
Well, and they would have to rematerialize. You would be able to have time to turn around, I would think. I mean, if it gets rematerialized, first you would see the energy materialization go through you first. I don't think that would work. and then it would show up on your radar. You'd be able to run away first. Right. So that just wouldn't make much sense, to be honest. I would think, though, that they would teleport other than a straight line. They would maybe teleport at the top of a rock or behind a rock or something other than a really predictable path, but maybe that's a way to balance it for us. So it's having the other harder knights, though, that'll be interesting to see how that exactly works. It's just like the elites, though, because in Halo Reach we had the tiered elites, so the lowest of the Promethean knights would be like a blue elite, and the like the highest one would be like the red elites. I forget what the classes are called. The zealots. Oh, zealots. So you'd have your infantry elites and then your zealot elites and everything in between. So, I didn't see anything specific for the Watchers in terms of classes. I think we did see a couple classes for the Crawlers, but they didn't go into much detail about it. They didn't do the side-to-side comparison like they did with the Knights.
I want to see an Engineer fight a Watcher. That would be interesting.
Well, Engineer really doesn't fight.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
but neither does a Watcher. I mean, they throw grenades back. They heal their they heal Knights and stuff. But that's what an Engineer does, you know. An Engineer just buffs up, you know, Covenant troops.
Okay.
I think the Engineer would have a clear advantage. Because the Engineer has those little, like, tentacle arm things.
Uh-huh.
You just, like, grab onto it and explode.
Grab onto it and tear it and kind of rip it apart.
Yeah.
And then put it back together again.
I think that could be, like, the new Easter egg in Halo 4.
Well,
maybe, like, a...
So, the Engineers were made by the Forerunners.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, what if an Engineer, like, fell in love with Watcher? And they decided to, like, hug. The Engineer was like, hold me, baby.
That gives a new definition to a match made in Halo.
Yes.
I like how the Engineers invented the chopper. That was cool.
Getting the chopper.
I just I read JVD that in Contact Artist.
Out of the Harvester thing? Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. And now it harvests blood.
And I just finished reading that book two days ago.
It's a pretty good book, yeah.
So now I'm on to the Cole Protocol, the last book of the second quote-unquote trilogy of books.
Quote-unquote.
Well, because it's not really a trilogy, but it's the set.
That's like the trilogy of like the old guard now, you know? Like the old canon, in a way.
Well, there's still Halo Evolutions that I haven't read yet, but...
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like saying that like the first three Star Wars movies don't count as canon because they came out in the 70s and 80s.
Well, they do, but that's like the old guard of Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like, there's kind of, it does feel like kind of a separation there. You know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
But it still plays, at least in my opinion, and I think the opinions of others that really get into the backstory of Halo, they still play an important role.
Yeah. Debating that, but yeah, it's.
But the newer books, the names of the trilogies are called, but the newer ones definitely have more weight in Halo 4 because they've actually designed the game to where they integrate with the books a lot easier.
Well, I assume they talked to Greg Baer about it, too. Like, 343 had direct contact with him, you know.
Well, yeah, Greg Baer and Karen Travis both, yeah. They probably have the Halo Bible and probably looking through that to... make sure that they have everything right and going into this game. They were probably coordinating very closely with the writers. Or I would hope so.
Probably, yeah.
They still said that you didn't have to read the books to know what's going on in the game, but if you do read the books, you'll understand a lot more of the backstory and why things are happening the way they are. So I'm hoping that I get to the books before the game comes out, which is my goal.
Yeah, if I have to read a trilogy... before Halo 4 comes out. I mean, don't have to. If I want to read a trilogy, I'm probably going to read the Forerunner trilogy.
The only thing is, I would have to basically read a book every 2 weeks for the next 6 weeks.
Which is not that much fun.
Yeah, 6 weeks until Halo comes out.
Well, I mean, it depends on how well written the books are and how interesting they are. I mean, if they're interesting,
it's
fun, you know?
It's Halo.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, even the William Dietz or whoever wrote The Flood. Dietz, or yeah, whatever his last name is. Sorry to butcher it. But even that book, a lot of people don't like the writing style, but there's still a lot of good information that's in there.
Yeah.
You get a lot of the backstory into what the other Marines were doing on Halo and really how Chief survived into Halo 2. It kind of fills, or it starts to do that. First Strike is where it actually gets into filling that gap.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, just seeing the other side of things was interesting.
No, I know what you mean. But I mean, that's like a lot of books to read in such a short amount of time. Like, you'd be so burned out by the end of that.
I'm not burned out by the ones I've read so far.
I did a book report.
It's interesting stuff.
My junior year in high school on Fall of Reach. And it was so full of jargon. I made 100 on it, but I felt bad for my teacher. Like, he's not going to understand any of this stuff.
I mean, if you write it well and you're passionate about it, and
I wrote it well, but I'm just saying that, like, there's a ton of jargon that, like, if you didn't understand Halo at all, like, it didn't really come together that well. I tried to write it.
Don't you get that with pretty much any fiction book?
They said you could choose whatever book you wanted to read for that book report.
Right.
And I wanted to read Fall of Reach, so that's
But any
fault.
Sci-fi book that you get into like that, there's going to be jargon specific to the book. I mean, you could say the same thing about Star Trek books. You could say the same thing about Mass Effect books. You could say the same.
Go read World of Warcraft books. I've read a bunch of those. Yeah, I mean.
Oh, I don't even want to try. Like, I know too much about.
Like, how many of those are there?
World of Warcraft books. Know. Oh God, there's at least 20. It's like ridiculous.
I mean, with how extensive World of Warcraft is,
just the lore in the game.
Lore. The universe is absolutely massive. Like half the books are like pre-WoW stuff, like Warcraft, you know, 3 type stuff. And
so how does the Red Shirt Man tie into the fiction?
How does the what?
The Red Shirt Man.
The
Red Shirt Guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah, he was saying in some, like, how in the Cataclysm beta there was some, like, certain character NPC somewhere in the world that was there, but, like, it didn't make sense that he was there because apparently he'd, like, died in one of the recent books or something, so it's complete, you know, like, canon discrepancy, and they're like, thanks for telling us, we didn't know about that, and they fixed it, and then they gave him, like, his own little NPC thing in the actual game.
Oh, yeah, I remember that guy.
Yeah. He had, like, Asperger syndrome or something, he talked kind of weird, but they were nice to him.
Well, I mean, when you're that much into the canon of things.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people like that with Halo.
Oh, yeah.
And people that I talked to at PAX this year, and like, what? Wow.
I mean, they hired people at 343 who were into the Halo canon from Ascendant Justice. Wasn't that it? Or
yes.
Yes, Ascendant Justice.
They hired the two guys that actually started the website.
Yes.
So Ascendant Justice is basically no more. Well, I think it's still there. It may be run by separate people. Or maybe it's just sitting there, like Holly McBloggy's thing. Her blog just sits there. It doesn't do anything. It's just like an archive of what she did before joining 343.
Yeah. Well, she's under, like, the biggest NDA on the planet. Like, there's probably 300
sheets. She works for 343. No kidding.
And that's what I'm saying. There's, like, 300 sheets of legal paperwork that, like, if she says anything at all concerning Halo 4, she's, like, fired or something.
I'm sure it's not that much. And I'm sure if she said something.
I'm exaggerating for emphasis, but yeah.
If I said something, I might not get to go to all the fancy little things that I get to do. But
secrecy has its rewards.
Mm-hmm. So, getting back on topic, Prometheans. I have to say, one of the designs that they came up with almost looks like Deoxys from Pokemon.
Yeah.
Remember seeing that at all, Brent? It was like the second or third one that they showed.
Yeah, on the discarded concept art.
Yeah, one looked like a Deoxys.
I was like, which evolution form is this Deoxys?
Well, there's only one, right?
No, there's different forms of Deoxys.
They added some?
No, they have different forms based on like an item they're holding or something. There's like a tack form, or I'm not sure. I don't know the exact specifications. I'm on Bulbapedia right now looking it up.
Goldenrod Radio, dude.
Yes, Deoxys has 4 forms: normal form, attack form, defense form, and speed form.
Huh.
And they all look different.
So. I did not know that.
Yes.
Okay, then.
Fun facts.
There's your Pokemon fun fact for the episode. This has been brought to you by Goldenrod Radio.
Goldenrod Radio, the future of podtacular podcasting.
So they also touched on Covenant a little bit in the Forerunner video, where they're really kind of showing a little more of the grungy side of the Covenant, and a little more ferocity than even in Reach. So there's still the class structure, but there's a lot more interaction between the elites, the jackals, the grunts, than there was in the past Halo games. I think from my play experience, the most kind of commanding view that you got was from ODST when you saw the brutes ordering around the grunts. I think that was kind of the only real moment that I remember seeing kind of the class structure of the Covenant actually being implemented into the AI of a game. And from what it sounds like for Halo 4, they're really focusing on making sure that's a lot more prevalent in the AI for this time around.
Well, in Halo 2 and Halo 3, you kind of see a little bit of that caste structure. It's not real important, but...
But there's a difference from being just AI-driven, like you see an elite being... or following up a group of grunts and scripted events to where it's true AI reacting to an environment.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the distinction I'm trying to make. And it's what it seems like they're kind of nailing home for Halo 4 over the other Halo games. Does that make sense?
If I kill the commander, I want the grunts to freak out. That's all I want.
They should.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, because grunts are like...
They did that in Halo peons. 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Run away!
Run away!
Yeah.
Demon!
Yeah. Was there anything else from the Forerunner video that you guys kind of picked out, other than kind of the from the class perspective of the knights and the designing aspect of them? I'll take that
Watchers
as a no.
Watchers kind of remind me... Or not Watchers. What are the dog-like enemies?
The crawlers.
Yeah, the crawlers. They kind of remind me of jackals a little bit. Just saying.
Hmm.
A little bit.
I guess from what perspective? Like the shape of them or how they act or...
You know, kind of like the movement and stuff. Like jackals could like jump around and stuff and get to high places and...
I guess,
you know, run around. And they run around in groups like... One-on-one, a jackal isn't unless they're carrying a sniper rifle, they're not a big problem, but, you know, right. A bunch of jackals, kind of a, I don't know.
Well, the 343 folks in the video kind of compared them more to grunts, which makes more sense because grunts are always in packs, and I was going to say the crawlers more act in pack form, where the more of them get together, the more, and they rush you too, they don't have any weapons on them or any way to really get you from a far distance. They have to come up and, I guess, chew your legs off.
Yeah. So in that way, they're kind of like infection form flood in a way. You know, I mean...
Kind of like those spider thingies?
Yeah. But like the grunts, to me, yeah, they're dangerous in packs because they have the plasma pistols, but they didn't have any mobility, really. They're kind of slow... And
even the jackals with the shields, though, which is the ones you see more often, they can jump out of the way, but they're slow, too, and there's usually not that many of them.
Yeah, but even those they act more independently, you know? They don't act as a real group, but at the same time, they understand that they're part of a group, and they use that to their advantage. They don't, like, group up as in, like, they're just moving at the same time in the same location. Whereas grunts, you can find like three or four in the same exact place. You know, if you throw a plasma grenade in the right spot, you can kill all four of them at the same time. Or if you just pull out your BR and start just, you know, popping them in the head, they're gone. That's the fun of Grunt Birthday Party is that, you know, their heads are so easy to shoot and they're one-shot kills. So you're just popping little confetti out, you know, all the time. But these Watchers seem more powerful in a way. In the same way that jackals are, you know? Like, a jackal is obviously more difficult to beat than a grunt. And I guess that's kind of the comparison I'm making. Like, grunts are pretty easy to beat, even in groups.
True.
They're kind of stupid, but the crawlers, the crawlers seem like intelligent. They're fast. They seem to move independently, even though they're in that group. Like, one of them seems like they'd be able to, like, you know, attack you from the back while, you know, two others are trying to hit you from the front. I'm not sure if that's how the AI is going to work or not, but they just seem more formidable than grunts, and that's why I don't feel like comparing them with grunts. But I see what you're talking about.
So, yeah, I see what you mean, too. Maybe like a combination between the two.
Yeah, obviously they're not going to have like a direct comparison with any of the other enemies because 343 designed this enemy to be completely different, you know? I mean...
Right. All right. Let's move on to this week's bulletin, which just got released yesterday as of this recording. And the main feature of that one was, of course, the Halo 4 Covenant weaponry video. We have 9 Covenant weapons, all of which are returning. I don't think there's... Well, okay, I take that back. There's one new Covenant weapon. So the new one is... excuse me. The new Covenant weapon is the Storm Rifle, which is basically a plasma repeater, kind of down in that rifle form, almost like a Covenant version of the SMG. Also returning to the mix, we have the Energy Sword, we have the Plasma Pistol, we have the Needler, we have the Covenant Carbine, we have the Beam Rifle, the Concussion Rifle, the Fuel Rod Cannon, and the Energy Sword. So all those weapons are in the game, 9 of them. And Beam Rifle was kind of a surprise for people at PAX this year because I don't think a lot of people were expecting that one. That one and the Concussion Rifle. So those were basically the two big weapon announcements that they made during PAX. And for the most part, the Beam Rifle is kind of been given a little power boost. From what Frankie said, it's a little more accurate than the human sniper rifle when you're firing from the hip, and it still has pretty much the one body shot from the Beam Rifle from Halo 3 and then the headshot, of course. In terms of the Concussion Rifle, instead of 6 rounds from Halo Reach, it has 4 rounds, and I don't know, from what I can tell, I didn't get my hands on the Concussion Rifle during PAX, but from what I can tell, the damage is a little bit higher in Halo 4 than it was in Reach, but the blast, I think, is not as powerful. Granted, again, this is just based off what I saw, so that might be a little skewed and maybe different when we actually get the game out. Energy Sword, there is no more sword blocking if you don't have a sword. If you go up against another guy with a sword, you can still sword clash and have the big clang battles over and over and over again. But there is no blocking of the sword if you try to melee with the standard weapon or anything else like it was in Halo Reach. So that's been quote unquote fixed back to the way it was in Halo 3. Gravity Hammer, from what I've heard people say, it's a lot more like the Halo 3 Gravity Hammer than the Halo Reach one. Again, I didn't get my hands on it. It wasn't in any of the playable stuff at PAX. We did get to see it during the Griffball panel, but it was special for that one only. The Covenant Carbine has been kind of beefed up as well. It has 18 rounds. I think that's the same count. It was 18 in Halo 3, right?
I honestly have no clue.
Yeah, I think it's the same round count that it was in Halo 3. It's very competitive in terms of matching up with the rest of the rifles in the game. So the light rifle, the DMR, the BR. And it's more of a close... it says medium to long in the video, but I think it's pretty effective up close as well. Because the carbine is just kind of a god weapon, if you know how to use it.
Oh, yeah.
One of the guys in the write-up says that it's technically the most lethal long-range rifle in the game. It fires a lot faster than all the other ones. I think the from what I can tell in the video, the firing rate is actually a little faster than that in Halo 3. And there was a video analysis done of the weapons. I wouldn't say Bravo did it, but it's you can shoot it about 7 times in 1 second. So the carbine might be one you want to consider when you choose your initial loadout.
That kind of brings up something that I'm worried about, though. If there is obviously a better weapon for any situation in Halo, what's the point of a loadout? Like, if the carbine is obviously better than the beam rifle, or not the beam rifle, the light rifle, or the DMR, or the VR.
I think it really depends on what game type you're playing, what map you're playing, and it's situational, too, and also what you're comfortable with. So you might be better at the BR than over the DMR. And you may play a close-range game compared to a lot of other people. So if you have a team and you have designated people that go and do certain things, so take, for instance, capture the flag. You have a flag runner, so obviously you want someone that uses maybe a BR/AR combination. So, because the BR tends to have a better close-range battle efficiency over the DMR and the carbine and a couple other weapons. So I think it's very situational and very game type slash map specificity slash your preference in gameplay. And I think that's one of the beauties of this new loadout system that they're having is everyone has access to these, but you can tailor the experience to yourself and it doesn't break the game.
Yeah. I play more of a close range game, so I'm probably going to go with the BR.
Yeah.
If only for the nostalgic aspect too, you know, because
yeah, a lot of people said they're going to try the BR to start with because of the nostalgia factor.
I mean, that was the Halo 2 and the Halo 3 gun, you know.
Exactly.
That's what you used. That was the professional play gun.
It was.
So, I don't know. I understand that Halo 4 is going to be a more situational game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they're trying to do is basically make you choose the situation that you're going to be proficient at and make sure you do that. Whereas in the other Halo games, everybody was on kind of the same page and you could choose your role in that match at any given time with any given weapon because it really didn't matter, you know.
Yeah.
If you wanted to be long range and, you know, you just ran up and grabbed a sniper rifle or something and
right.
Went to town. If you wanted to be close range, grabbed a shotgun, started doing that. But with these loadouts, they're trying to push you into a specific role on your team. And I appreciate that, but I'm just worried that there's going to be these weapons that are going to be obviously better than other comparable weapons in their class. And those are just going to be the way to go. I mean, because they've had the same problem in like World of Warcraft, where they'd have all these skill trees. But there was obviously one skill tree that you needed to spec into because that was the way to go. That was the optimum skill tree to pick or skill set to pick because that was how you got optimum damage in any given, you know, encounter.
I mean, I see the argument there, but I think with Halo and just because the weapons aren't outrageously unbalanced from each other. There's little nuances that makes one weapon favorable to another. Based on a lot of different factors. And I think if you manage to get well at a weapon that you like, that you're going to be able to play on the level of someone else that's at your level, and maybe they have a different weapon, but you guys can still play at a comparable level.
Right.
I know what you mean, Brent, because in WoW, when people want to do the most damage, they always just go Google what's the best talent tree setup. And then everyone ends up using the same setup and the same rotation, and yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not as afraid that that's going to happen in Halo 4, just because one, the diversity of the players, and because you're going to have casual players that choose one thing, you're going to have pro players that choose another thing or mirage of things, and even going back to Halo Reach, where it's either the DMR or AR to start with. There are people that can use the AR pretty effectively. Now, the DMR being a lot more precision is definitely more favored to the pros, and it usually outbeats the AR. But if you have someone that knows how to use the AR and use it well, they can still hold their own ground. Like, yeah, I've done DMR versus AR battles, and I've lost AR battles sometimes just because they managed to place their shots just that much better than I could with my DMR. Like, I maybe missed one DMR shot, and I'm still screwed.
Yeah.
So there's still game factors that balance out those weapons. And I don't think it's really going to be that big of an issue. I don't think they would do that kind of loadout for Halo 4 and not make sure that the game is still balanced. Because that's, in my opinion, one of the core features of Halo 4 is the fact that everyone has access to pretty much the same stuff at the beginning of the game. And you can go out and you have the equal opportunity to go out and get the vehicles and power weapons.
Well, if you get the legendary, or not the legendary, if you get the limited edition, you get access to those specializations at first. Whereas other people don't.
You have access to customized classes. You don't get, I don't think you get anything extra that anyone else can't get.
No, from what I understood, the specializations are unavailable to people unless you have the limited edition for like the first few months. So like things like operator and...
Well, specializations are not weapons though.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about weapons. I'm talking about like Halo 4 balance in general. You know, if you're playing a game where people are able to spec into operator and the other vehicle class, I don't remember the name, but you know, if you don't have access to that because you didn't buy the limited edition, they're going to have a big advantage because if you get those two classes on a single vehicle, you know, they're going to be really powerful because the operator class is going to regen his, you know, his vehicle's health back faster. And then, I can't believe I don't remember what that other class is called. Let me look. It's the other vehicle class. It's not operator. It's
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember.
Pathfinder. Yes, Pathfinder. And it increases, it decreases weapon cooldown on your vehicle. You know, so basically they're going to be able to fire the Goss Hog and the Turret Hog, you know, even faster than other people.
Yeah, I guess it's a good point.
Mm.
Although that, but even if someone else had that thing enabled for their profile, that they wouldn't be able to use it unless they were in the vehicle. I get what you're saying, but I don't think it affects the game that drastically.
I'm just saying, wait until we get into BTB, and there's going to be two people who decide that they want to use Pathfinder and Operator in conjunction to make like a super vehicle, because that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna find somebody, like, I don't care if I'm Pathfinder or Operator, I'm gonna pick one of those two. We're gonna go into BTB, and we're just gonna rip it up, you know, because the vehicle's gonna recharge faster. My turret's going to recharge faster, you know, the cooldown's going to be decreased. I don't know how dramatically the decrease is going to be, but, you know, in a Goss Hog, that matters. The decrease matters. You know, back in the Halo 2 days, you could go like 25-0 in a Goss Hog, you know, just running around Zanzibar, you know, popping people with that Goss Cannon.
Or you could do like that one guy in Halo 3 that went 107 and nothing.
Yeah.
I see what you mean, though. I still feel like it's not that big of an issue, because even if everyone had that unlocked, you're still going to face that issue. Sure, you might not be able to do it yourself, but you're still, I don't know. It seems like that's not as much of a thing to worry about for me.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just me. Because even if you had all the stuff unlocked, they still have that. They would still have that advantage and still be able to play exactly the same. The only thing that would really affect it is if you're going up against them, maybe in another vehicle, and it's like the timings are just that different.
Well, yeah, if you go up against a Scorpion who doesn't have that same, you know, recharge rate on their turret or whatever, the Goss Cannon is going to win against that Scorpion. I mean, in Halo 2, that was...
If the Scorpion shoots you once, you're pretty much dead.
Yeah, but I'm saying operator
but they
style,
wouldn't,
I mean...
I don't think they would put that kind of overpowering use in the game without making sure that it could be overcome. It might be a little bit more difficult to overcome, but I don't think they would make the game that unbalanced
I'm not saying that Pathfinder and Operator are going to make the vehicle invincible. Obviously, you're going to be able to destroy the vehicle, but Operator makes it more difficult to destroy the vehicle, assuming your driver knows what they're doing. And I mean, if they're specking into Operator, you think that maybe they have a little idea of how to effectively drive the vehicle around. And I mean, that works in all vehicles, as far as I understand. So you could have somebody in a Scorpion, and you know, Scorpions are rough enough to blow up as it is, you know, and if they've already got a high, you know...
Right, but you still have to wait till level 50 to get into your specialization.
You know how fast people are going to get to level 50 in Halo 4?
Not that fast.
There are going to be people who get to level 50 within the first 3 days, if not sooner.
I doubt it's going to be that easy.
In Halo 3,
it's an XP-based.
I know it's XP-based, but that's what I'm saying. You're going to have these dudes who are just going to play for like 72 hours in a row.
You know who's going to do that? It's going to be like IGN and like the Machinima guys and all those groups just like constantly playing, like having people like rotating in and out like 24/7 around the clock type thing, like guarantee you. They always do that kind of thing.
But I mean, there were generals in Halo 3 within the first week. Think about that.
No lifers.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's a lot. But that's a different system than this one is. Because this Spartan rank is purely based off EXP. It's more like Reach's ranking system, where Halo 3 was a mix of EXP and skill.
But I'm saying there was...
You could get to level 50 pretty quickly just because of how low the XP... So the 50 in Halo 3 was skill-based. It wasn't XP-based. You could get to General Grade 1 with, I think it's only 600 XP. Which, yeah, it doesn't... if you play for like a week straight, yeah, it doesn't take that long to get up there. But I don't think that it's going to be that easy to get to level 50. I think it's going to take at least a solid... Like, if you played on a regular basis, maybe 2 weeks. Like, if you played for 12 hours straight every day or something like that. I don't think it's going to be that easy to get to level 50.
I'm not saying it's going to be a huge problem. I'm just saying for as long as it takes for them to give the specializations to everybody. And I'm not sure how long that's going to be. You know, it could be a month. It could be a couple weeks. There's no telling. They haven't said yet. But until then...
Well, and there's 8 specializations.
Yeah, but I'm saying those specializations have significant... upgrades to parts of the game that matter.
Right.
And I mean, right now I'm just talking about Pathfinder and Operator, and those are just vehicles. You know, I mean, just thinking about the other specializations that are out there that other people won't have access to if they just buy the regular edition. I mean, that's not going to affect me because I'm going to get the limited edition. You know, I'm going to have access to all the specializations from the start. But you look at the other specializations, and some of those
you
are
have six out of the eight.
So, I mean, you've got like...
Or nine. Eight.
I think that Pioneer is available at the start for people who just buy regular editions. So they can get the enhanced XP gain or whatever, but
said specifically which ones are available at start. I don't think they specifically said that yet. I could be wrong.
According to IGN, and believe me, IGN has been wrong many, many times, but according to this article, it says, an important part, two of the specializations, Pioneer and Wetworks, will be available at launch. The rest will come later online unless you purchase the Halo 4 Limited Edition, in which case you'll have access to all 8 at launch. So you'll have Wetworks, which makes Promethean Vision... it's harder for you to show up on Promethean Vision. And also you have dampening on your sound of your Spartan running. So
I see what you're saying, but I honestly don't think it's going to play out any differently than what it would be if everyone had access to them.
Okay. That's just
my opinion.
That's fair. I don't know how it's going to work out, you know? The game isn't out yet. I'm just worried about it. Not like worried as in like...
Fair enough.
I'm not going to buy the game because of this. But
you're concerned.
I just don't. I'm afraid that there's going to be a number of people who are going to be frustrated with the fact that people who bought the limited edition have a distinct advantage over them, and they're just going to quit playing. And I don't want that to happen. I want as many people playing Halo for as long as possible, you know, as long as they're not just...
Well, I mean, they have that in Call of Duty, and look how successful Call of Duty is. And it's even more dramatic in Call of Duty.
Yeah, but with Call of Duty, you expect that. Halo has a different expectation, you know? I mean, the past four major Halo games, major online, you know, Halo games, and, I mean, not Halo 1, because that wasn't online, but, you know, with Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo Reach, it was a basically a fair playing ground, you know? You had a... Everybody was on the same kind of page as far as weapons went. You could, with Halo Reach, you can argue that the loadouts kind of ruined it. But the point of Halo was that it was always kind of fair. Like, if you got killed, it was your own fault.
Right.
You know, you couldn't blame it on the weapon.
I don't think that's gone away, though.
I actually thought that Halo is kind of like, it's like the American dream. Like, everyone has equal opportunity. Like, we started out with assault rifles or BRs or whatever. But you can climb up by grabbing power weapons and vehicles.
And Halo 4 is like communism, where 343 is dictating that only the elite can get specializations, you know. Everybody's equal, but some are more equal than others. And the limited edition people are the more equal, and yeah.
Yeah. We're the elite class. Everyone else is the proletariat or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
The proletariat must rise up against the bourgeoisie, you know?
I honestly don't think it's going to...
Bourgeoisie...
I don't think they would put something that's that imbalanced into
the
game.
We are the bourgeoisie right here on Podtacular, the limited edition fanboys.
Yes. This is it. The Podtacular is the revolutionary, you know, proletariat group. I don't know.
But
I'm not worried about it. I mean, I'm not saying that like it's gonna ruin the game. I'm just saying for like the first month, expect some people who just bought the normal version of the game to complain about people with specializations. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think it's gonna even get that far in the first month, to be honest.
I mean, people will complain no matter what, even if it isn't that big of a problem. I mean, look at the Bungie forums when Halo 3 and Halo Reach came out.
Yeah. It is what it is, though.
I like that new fuel rod cannon, and I don't know why.
It's nerfed, though.
It doesn't look like it's nerfed, but...
Have you noticed that
I know
for all the Covenant weapons, the new reticle, it's all a circle. Storm rifle, circle. Fuel rod, circle. Sword even is a circle. It's just a complete perfect circle on all of them.
The Covenant weapons, except for the plasma pistol and the plasma rifle, have been like that.
Yeah.
And the spiker.
Sword was never a perfect circle. It was like
it was a crescent.
Crescent moon, yeah.
The spiker was a square, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
with rounded edges.
The fuel rod, it was never a perfect circle. It was like some weird, like, wavy thing all around, kind of. It was.
I actually enjoyed the spiker.
I like that weapon too. The thing is, everybody always forgets that it's even in Reach, because it's not on any of the maps.
No, it's not.
But it's on some of those like Forge made maps, like for Team Slayer. It's on some of them, and it actually takes Shield out really fast. The problem is it's horrible for taking down health. It's so slow for taking down health. You got to get out like a DMR or something at that point.
Well, I mean, the point of the Spiker was always that you like ran at somebody with it. And it was so fast at taking down shields that by the time you got up to them, you could just melee them to death.
Which is why it has the blade on it, exactly.
Yeah.
I remember back in Halo 3, I always used to think the blade, like the brute shot and the spiker, I always thought they had like slightly stronger beatdowns because of the blades, but now it's just an aesthetic.
I mean, it would make sense if they did.
It would make sense, yeah, certainly would.
I mean, it definitely felt like that when you hit someone with it.
Oh, yeah.
What the heck was
those brutes in the Halo 3 campaign, like legendary, like just whacking you in the face with their brute shot blade and all that? Like,
yeah. Getting back to the weapons, the Needler, from their description, it's a little bit more accurate and a little bit more powerful than it has been. From what I've seen, and we actually had a video put up of someone actually using the Needler, definitely more powerful than the one in Reach. I think the individual spikes are more powerful than the one in Halo 3. Let's see, it was Halo... The Halo 1 Needler was just slow. Was the Halo 3 Needler was just fast, right? It was fast, and if you managed to get enough needles on them, that it super combined.
That was basically the only way you could kill them was if you had unloaded like a full clip, and then it super combined.
I think... Sorry, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
I was going to say that the Needler in Halo 4 looks like the speed and the damage are a lot more balanced, somewhere between kind of the speed of Halo. It's a little bit closer to the Halo Reach's speed for the Needler rounds, but the damage is a little bit more comparable to that. I don't know. The individual rounds seem a lot more powerful than any of the other Needlers in the game. Because Halo 2, you had the dual wield. They're a little bit slower. I guess the Halo 2 Needler, in terms of damage, is a little bit more comparable to this one. But overall, the Needler looks just balanced.
For the past two major Halo games, Halo 3 and Halo Reach, they've always said that, yeah, this is the game where the Needler is king, you know? And I mean, I never used the Needler in either Halo 3 or Halo Reach, so...
Well, for Halo 3, you had to be super accurate in order to get the needles on them, and it was quick enough to where if you were accurate and you could land the needles, you could get the kills easily with the Needler in Halo 3. But that did not happen very often, and the tracking of the Needler was not that good. Halo Reach, they made a better improvement. Halo 2's Needler with the dual wielding, I mean that's just kind of a god thing. If you have dual wielded Needlers, you're pretty much unstoppable.
Yeah.
Halo 1 was I mean, it was a cool weapon, pretty much, in Halo 1.
Yeah.
You didn't really use it that much. Except, I mean, you would use it against the Elites because it tracked really well. It was just really slow.
The problem with the Needler is that it has the potential to be such a powerful weapon that I'm not sure how you would balance it. I mean, that's kind of the problem they've had for
the past.
It's
like a beast trying to... you're trying to tame a beast.
Yeah.
Almost.
Trying to tame the tiger.
Mm-hmm.
One option is to just give the Needler, like, a very limited amount of ammo. And I don't know if they want to do that. Make it, like, super accurate as far as homing.
So they did. It has 18 rounds for the magazine capacity.
Yeah, but how many rounds does it take to super combine? Like 6 or 7?
It's
gotta be more than that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely more than that.
Let me look it
actually
up.
No, the Needler in Reach was 17 rounds, so they actually added a round. I think the Super Combine, I didn't watch the video closely, I guess you're doing that now. But it seemed like you had to at least get good maybe 9 or 10 needles in someone.
So at most you're gonna get like 2 kills out of the Needler, maybe in Halo 4.
I would guess that if you're able to perfectly shoot the Needler, and 9 needles you get a super combine, so that way you would get 2 exactly if you timed it right and if you landed shots right. Maybe 8 rounds to do a super combine. They do say here in their little interviews that it's the most powerful Needler to date. And the speed has been bumped up a little bit. So it's definitely got kind of a boost to it. But it's not the 30 needles like it was in Halo 2 and Halo 1. I forget how many needles were in a round in Halo 3. Was it still 30?
That's what I'm saying. I didn't use the Needler in Halo 3 or Halo Reach.
I used it like, a lot more in ODST. I used the Needler a lot in ODST.
I thought the Needler was kind of insane in Halo 3. That's when I really started like beefing it up for the first time, I remember. And then...
It was useful in campaign and ODST, but it was not that useful in multiplayer matchmaking.
I remember in Reach, they kind of made it more like an assault rifle where the shield really depleted as you shot them, even if you didn't necessarily reach the super combine.
Well, yeah, they're supposed to do that. And they do that in Halo 4 as well.
Yeah, I like that. It's like, it's kind of like a alternative assault rifle instead of the usual plasma rifle.
Although yeah, the Needler is kind of one of the specialty. Longest time,
it's felt more of like a homing device in a way, the way those
I just hope the homing aspect of the Needler has been refined in Halo 4, because that's always been one of the tricky things for the Needler in Halo games. It was always super, super accurate in Halo 1. Halo 2, it tracked really well, but the needles went so fast that sometimes you would miss. And I think that was the balancing aspect for the tracking, was the speed at which the needles shot. Halo 3, they dialed back the tracking ability, and they kept the speed. I think they increased the speed a little bit, so it was a lot harder to use. So, do you find that spot, Brent? Are you still looking? He must still be looking. While he's looking,
I thought the Halo 3 Reach Needler, like when you use it like super up close, it wasn't tracking at all, right? Because it's super up close. But that's when it's like really a really good assault rifle. Like it just takes the shield down pretty fast.
Yeah, if you can hit the guys.
Yeah,
it definitely seemed like it. But
yeah,
at somewhere between close and medium range, that's where you start to where the tracking ability really comes into play. At close range, is like you basically have to be shooting directly at him or kind of anticipating where he's going to be in relationship to the needles, because I'll be shooting straight at him, but the needles go by him because the tracking doesn't have enough time to get onto him. But once you get outside that medium range,
like screwing you over in a way, right?
Yeah, kind of. Once you get out of that medium range, beyond that medium range, it's just pretty much useless to use the needler.
You have to definitely get into a kind of range, yeah.
Yeah. The last weapon that we haven't quite covered yet is the plasma pistol, and it drains a lot more energy a lot quicker now. So you have to be really conservative of when you use the plasma rifle. Kind of going through some things, whenever you hold a charge, it pretty much goes down, I think, like maybe 2 or 3 energy units per second, so it drains a lot quicker. The overcharge, I think you maybe have 4 or 5 overcharge bursts that you can use, so it's not nearly as much as it was, because Halo 3 you had pretty much an infinite amount of energy for the plasma pistol, because it just didn't require that much energy to use it. You could probably get about 7 or 8 overcharges out of it. You could pretty much shoot that thing all day long if you paste your shots without making sure it overheated. But it's one of the reasons why the energy drains so quickly, because it's pretty much gotten beefed up. The individual bolts take out a lot more shield than they used to. The overcharge, of course, zaps energy shields and zaps vehicle energy, so most of the same characteristics still exist. It's just the plasma pistol as a whole has been kind of beefed up, and I guess in retrospect, kind of leveled out compared to Halo 3 and Halo Reach, just because you can't use it to constantly zap someone. So we'll see how that kind of affects people using the plasma pistol.
Yeah, I mean, it's just noob combo right in there, done that, the dead horse.
Well, they said that they're not bringing back the noob combo. It's not. I guess they're kind of redesigned it in such a way where, since the plasma pistol doesn't last as long, it doesn't really take into effect that you can use that kind of combination that often.
Hmm. That's good.
So.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, one of the lines in here is, if you're a fan of the noob combo, I recommend trying to scavenge a Magnum as a backup. So, for the one part, yeah, it's kind of still there. That's basically what that's saying. But for the most part, one of the other guys basically said they're not, what they're doing with the plasma pistol is not trying to bring back the noob combo. I mean, it's from the standpoint of what the noob combo actually is, yeah, it's in there, but it's not something that we're going to have to be worried about. Going back to the sounds, I'm still kind of the opinion that the sounds are lackluster. They said that they tried to make the sounds a little bit more high-pitched and more kind of recognizable, separate from the other weapons, and they do have unique sounds to them. I just think the texture of the sounds is still a little bland compared to the other Halo games.
Pew, yeah. Pew, 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 pew.
Pew, 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 pew.
Well, the big thing with the plasma pistol for me, and I'm just, you know, I'm just making a comment out there, is that in the past two Halo games, Halo 3 and Halo Reach, I've used the plasma pistol almost exclusively to take out vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was it wasn't a noob combo utility for me. It was just, you know, there's a Warthog coming at me. What do? You pull out the plasma pistol, charge it up, and shoot it, you know? That way I can stick it, I can, you know, throw a grenade under it, whatever.
Yeah, it's a vehicle zapper.
Yeah.
And I've used it as a noob combo in Halo Reach. I've done that. I've zapped someone with the plasma pistol, and I pulled out my DMR and one-shot them in the head. But it looks like they've kind of realized that, and they said, okay, it's going to take a lot more energy for you to pull something like that off, so choose your shots wisely. Is what it seems like they're pretty much saying with how this has kind of been nerfed.
Well, in the Covenant weapons video...
It's been nerfed
video,
and beefed.
Yeah.
Sorry, what
in
were you
the
saying?
Video, they even show it like going up against a scorpion, and they zap the scorpion. So,
yeah,
I think
they've
realized that. I think they're trying to transition into a more anti-vehicle role for the plasma pistol this time,
which is perfectly fine.
Yeah, I
mean, you
fine
can
with
still
it.
You can still use it against like players. You can still zap their shields and. From what it sounds like, the individual bolts are more powerful than the past Halo games were.
Just a quick thought. I mean, would you guys say that these weapons have, like, longevity to them? Because, like, we're talking about how they're changing things up and keeping things the same and such for Halo 4. I mean, we're actually going to be doing this every single time, right? Halo 5, Halo 6. Did you see the other day that they registered the domain names for Halo 7 through 9? Get ready for that. You know what I mean? It's just like they're going to have to keep remaking the same weapons over and over and over and over in different ways in the long run here. Like, you know what I mean? Like, will it hold up?
Well, I've said it before, and I'll say it here again. Like, if they just made Halo a multiplayer game that they released every year like Madden, I would be perfectly fine with that. I mean, I love the Halo story, but for me... Where I get the most enjoyment out of Halo is the multiplayer experience. So, I really have as long as they keep iterating on the multiplayer experience in meaningful ways, that's all I care about.
Because, in essence, I mean, yeah, the weapons do play an important part of how multiplayer is played, but we have how many new weapons in the game, other than the Prometheans? Maybe 3 weapons?
I mean, they don't.
We have the Storm Rifle, which is basically the plasma repeater. We have the Railgun, which is something new.
Think about it this way. They don't change the shape of the football in every Madden game that comes out. That football is the same shape every single time. You know?
Right. Although I think Madden's a little different. At least with Halo, we get updates to the engine. We have new maps. We have new...
Well, they update the engine in Madden, too, just not very often.
But it's like you're playing the same football fields.
But, I mean, they are the same football fields. Like, they don't build a lot of new football fields every year.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is Halo 4 is different in that. The engine is significantly different compared to...
Yeah. They have the freedom to iterate on the system and the different experiences you can have in Halo, where they don't have that experience with Madden. But yet, Madden comes out every single year, and it sells, you know, millions of copies.
People pay $60 bucks for it. I'm not one of those people.
Right. Me neither.
So, it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm with Brent. If they made a Halo game every year, yeah, I would buy it. Thankfully, they don't, and thankfully, they make games that actually last, unlike Call of Duty.
Well, I mean, the longer the development time, the better the game is going to be. I mean, that's the idea behind Halo, or not Halo, Half-Life 3, right? I mean, that's been in development for how long now? I have no clue.
It hasn't been in development, from what they've said.
It's not in development?
No, they've never come out. They've never come out publicly and said that it's in development.
Well, I gotta believe it's in development.
I mean, it could be the best gaming troll in the history of video games. It may never come out because it may never exist.
Somebody's working on Half-Life 3. I mean, they have concept art for it.
I didn't know that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're making
concept
it.
Concept art of
I mean, that's concept art. That doesn't mean they're making it.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I'm saying the concept art is a part of development. It's the very first part, but they've shown off concept art of the Borealis, which is the Aperture Science ship that went missing, and you can even find the dock in Portal 2 where the Borealis was, but apparently in Half-Life 3 you're going to board the Borealis at some point.
Okay. I mean, look how long it took him. Okay, I believe you. I mean, I'm just now thinking to Duke Nukem Forever, and it took them how long to make that?
Yeah, but I'm saying that's a little different. Gearbox bought that franchise
at
a discounted rate and made it in, like, what, 2 years?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they're just getting out the door, that's all.
I mean, like, Gearbox does well with Borderlands, though, so.
Good for them for, like, at least... Like, in my opinion, like, Gearbox, like, they were doing, like, a favor, like an act of valor, so to speak, like, for the gaming industry. Like, just taking this thing that was been floating around and, like, let's just freaking get this done. Like, for the sake of everyone, you know? Like, good for them.
It's out there. It's done.
Yeah. And it sucks.
Yeah. So, that's pretty much all the weapons that we got for the Covenant. 9 of them. Make sure that when you ever get the game, kind of test them out. Yeah.
Can I say one more thing before we quit talking about Covenant weapons?
All right.
Who was asking for the Covenant rifle? Or not the Covenant, the concussion rifle.
Who was asking for it?
Yeah, like, in Halo Reach, nobody used the concussion rifle. Because it sucks.
It's, in my opinion, it's very situational.
Yeah, but I'm saying even when I was, like, going up against vehicles, it wasn't that effective.
It's a one-time use, pretty much. It's like the Brute Shot.
But, I mean, at least the Brute Shot had, like, good melee attack. Like, I mean, the Brute Shot actually did have increased melee damage in Halo 2.
I think the concussion rifle was more effective against vehicles because you could bump around everywhere, especially warthogs and mongies.
Yeah, but the point, I don't want to bump vehicles around. I want to blow them up. You know, if my warthog gets bumped around, I can recover and, you know, keep running towards my base with the flag runner or whoever. But if I get blown up, you know, that's the end. That's the point. With a Brute Shot, you could at least, like, flip a warthog over. But with a concussion rifle, it just seemed like it would turn your warthog over, but your warthog would always kind of land on the tires and you could keep going.
Uh-huh.
If anything, I wish the concussion rifle in Halo 4 had, like, extended splash damage.
Splash damage.
Splash.
Yeah, like Magikarp splash, like...
Yeah, Magikarp.
Splash. It did nothing.
Well, they say that there's stronger physics to it.
I hope so.
Which I guess means the blast is going to be bigger, although... I'm hoping a direct impact, because it takes 3 direct impacts in Reach, I think, to kill someone. And there's only 4 rounds in this concussion rifle for Halo 4, so I don't know. For the fuel rod, they nerfed the fuel rod, in my opinion, whenever I got my hands on it. I mean, yeah, it still has the one shot to the face, but other than that, the splash damage is significantly reduced. So,
I felt that
for the concussion rifle, it seems like they're beefing up the explosive capacity, but the direct impact might not be as high. Or maybe it's the same because they only have 4 rounds now. I don't know. The concussion rifle wasn't a big ticket item during the gameplay at PAX, so I honestly don't know. But yeah, so the last thing in the bulletin from yesterday was the details, or at least an image of the limited edition. We had the details before, but now we can actually see everything that comes with it. Of course, we have the steel case with the games in it. We have the nice fancy box that it comes in. The pretty much the guide to your armor for the warrior armor skin, or just the armor in general. There's a few pamphlets with a few special envelopes, a couple of cards in there. There's also the assault rifle skin that you get, the armor skin. There's a Cryo 2 drop, Cryo 2 prop that you can get for your avatar. A recruit armor that you can wear on your avatar. Of course, the Forward Unto Dawn live action digital series, including an extended version of it, which is essentially 6 episodes. So it's an hour and a half. You get access to the 9 new maps when they come out. You get, you get 6 additional specializations, that you can have on, launch. So that when you get to level 50, you can choose any one of them. You don't have to wait for the community unlocks. And you also get an emblem that you can use in game. So a nice little image of all of that is available in the bulletin. So make sure you go check that out. I know you're getting the limited edition. Were you getting the limited edition, Daft?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so all of us are getting it.
I love getting limited edition.
And we will most likely do an unboxing video of it.
Oh, that'd be cool.
So
the unboxing.
The unboxing, yes. Major like Nelson's supposed to be doing one, too. The game case or the full box?
Well, the full box, too, but I mean, as far as the like metal case for it, looks nice. I like that UNSC logo on it, yeah.
Indeed.
Looks cool.
You know what's hilarious? The Borderlands 2 like Ultra Edition or whatever, it was like $130 or something.
Oh, and for the Vault Hunters edition,
yeah,
or whatever.
It came out in this giant like chest, but there wasn't even anything that good in it. It was just like stupid stuff, like concept art, like and just maps and like bobbleheads, like just nonsense gimmick crap. Like for that much money, like at least the Halo 4 $100 edition has like stuff you're actually going to use in the game.
Some well, you content. Also get you get Forward Unto Dawn, which is worth a bit of money itself, and you get but the 9 like, new maps.
You get so you basically pay the if you consider the pricing, you pay the retail price for the maps.
Yeah.
And you pay like if the DVD for Forward Unto Dawn was $10, you pay $10 for that, and then everything else is free.
Well,
everything else in that box would be free.
The DVD for Forward Unto Dawn wouldn't be $10; it'd be about 15 or 20. So
yeah, you're doing that plus some.
And you're getting all the skins, and you're getting the avatar props, so.
Yeah.
And you get the map, like the Mjolnir, you know,
yeah, like
schematics
your armor,
or whatever.
Yeah,
blueprints, yeah.
And like you get the still case. I mean,
yeah.
If you care about Halo, if you know that you're going to play Halo 4 for a long time, there's no reason to not get the limited edition.
Right.
Exactly. The thing is, though, like with the Borderlands thing, it's like, so take it like at Halo, we have those like schematics, or like take like Halsey's journal, like physical like lore stuff we can look at for like once and then put it away forever. Like that was the whole like collector edition was like stuff like that, like physical lore stuff. And it's just
is this
worth that much money? And is this universe even developed enough for people to even care about this stuff? Like who even cares?
Yeah, there's people who, I mean,
people
not
care.
Or
I
not
mean, that's why they have it, because people are into
it. Yeah,
that
but
kind
Borderlands
of thing.
Is not anywhere near as developed as Halo. Like, that's like.
No, it's not, but people
like
are,
a molehill
people are
to
still
a mountain.
Into it, though. It's,
I, know, it's I just, think it's a little. I think it's a tad expensive for such a young series, one man's opinion.
Fair enough.
I know that it's a young series, but it's also a popular series. It is. Like, because it was basically the first FPS to get the loot kind of. Factor right in a game.
Diablo?
Yeah, but I mean just loot in general, because you can get loot anywhere, you know? I mean, Diablo isn't the only game with loot in it. World of Warcraft has loot.
I mean, like, it was one of their promo videos. It was RPGs and FPSs come together to make a baby, pretty much.
Well, yeah, I mean, like Penny Arcade was saying earlier, you know, Hellgate London tried that stuff and it didn't work. You know, people don't even know what Hellgate London is nowadays. But
what is that? What are you
talking
about?
I've never heard of it.
It's a failed version of basically an FPS with Diablo elements to it, but it had randomized environments, and it didn't work. It was an online, it was an MMORPG, but it didn't work. You know, Borderlands was able to get that formula right.
I would call Borderlands probably a cartoony Fallout-ish thing with, like, Diablo elements. People compare it to Fallout a lot because it's like kind of similar in gameplay. You're wandering around a wasteland.
It kind of is. I agree to that.
But it has much smoother gunplay than Fallout, that's for sure.
To me, Fallout was a lot more depressing than Borderlands. Oh, like, Borderlands is set in a future where, you know, things exist. The only reason that Pandora is a wasteland is because all of the corporations on that planet in the first game had left because they didn't think that the vault existed. And
yeah, they sucked it dry, and they just left a bunch of, like, convicts on the planet.
Yeah, in Fallout, like, the only planet that exists other than, like, the aliens is planet Earth. And planet Earth had destroyed itself with, you know, nuclear warfare.
Fallout's a different type of game in my mind, though.
Yeah.
Well, thinking of it with Borderlands,
It's more of an RPG than a first-person shooter, where Borderlands was basically trying to pull even sides of RPG and first-person shooter aspects.
The thing with Borderlands is, like, the world kind of sucks for the most part, but they kind of, like, just, like, make the best out of it. Like, they kind of just make kind of funny and stuff.
I mean, it's a comedy, in a way.
Yeah, definitely.
You could argue that Borderlands is a comedy.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, Fallout kind of doesn't even take itself that seriously sometimes. That's kind of like gimmicky and
but
stuff.
I'm saying
like,
that
kind of camp in a way.
At its very core, Fallout is a drama. It tries to be funny sometimes. It tries to make fun of the situation, but at the same time, it's very depressing. You know, because it's basically like saying that, you know, the nuclear war between the USA and Russia. In China or whatever, basically came to a head in the 1950s or 60s.
No, man. No, the world in Fallout, actually, the nuclear war was in, like, 77 or something. It's just, yeah, I mean, it just seems like the 50s because the culture never really evolved.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it all started back then, and they all went into their vaults and stuff, and I don't know. It's just a lot more depressing than Borderlands. Like, I don't think anybody can say that Borderlands is a depressing game.
No, it's a fun game. It's a fun game.
But you could definitely say that Fallout is, in a way, depressing.
Oh, God, yeah.
I agree. Yeah. But that's how it was made to be. They did a good job of what they wanted to do for the game.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Which is why they try to sprinkle, you know, camp and like humor into it every now and then, so it's you're not just like depressed out of your mind playing it.
But I mean, Borderlands has a lot of references to, you know, new memes that have come out,
right?
Yeah.
Well,
Borderlands.
Well,
does,
Fallout seems a lot more
hipster.
Classy,
or not Borderlands? Fallout.
Fallout
doesn't.
Seems a lot more classy than Borderlands.
Wait,
does.
You don't think Borderlands has memes? No, Borderlands is like hip with the times.
No, that's what I'm saying. Borderlands is full of memes. Whereas Fallout really doesn't have very many meme references at all.
And that's fine.
Yeah, that's great. That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying that Fallout isn't trying to be a fun, comedic game. Whereas Borderlands, I feel, is.
Fallout is not blasting dubstep in its trailers, exactly. But then again, so is Halo nowadays. Oh!
Yeah, I know, right?
Boy, where are we going?
Back on the topic of Halo, we have some submissions that you guys wrote in. Some about the stuff that we saw in the bulletins. Some older ones that we haven't read since the last time. So let's go ahead and get into some of those. This first one comes from Bioman998. He says, What do you think will be implemented, if anything, to stop players or discourage them from betraying teammates or adversely affecting your gameplay? I can't tell you how many times I've gotten the sniper rifle on Hemorrhage and then been betrayed for it, or a teammate knocks me out of scope. What about and what about players helping the other team? I see little clans start up, and while I'm trying to get some kills, these people on my team, usually everyone, has the same service tag as a couple of other people on the other team, and they do put it nicely. Oh, and they, to put it nicely, make the game very hard for me. I would assume that they're working on their kind of cheat detection system or betrayal system, to make it to where it's a lot more effective. They have not come out and said anything. When people have asked them, they said they didn't have anything to comment at the time. I think that's kind of one of those things where it's, they're really not in the mood to tell anyone about it, because then people would try to figure out how to game the system. So, I would think that they're working on the whole betrayal slash, kind of adverse playing of the game. Let's see.
I think, and I'm just saying this, if you melee somebody and it's a betrayal, then it should count as a, you know, a bannable kind of offense where you can X the player out.
Mm-hmm.
Because how many times have you accidentally meleed somebody on your own team to death?
I've done it. Or it's like you're in a close firefight with someone and you just get mixed up and you accidentally hit your teammate instead of the other guy because you're spinning around trying to melee someone. It's happened before. I've backsmacked someone, and granted it gives the other guy the kill, but I still was the cause of the death. It's happened to me multiple times. It's really hard from a coding perspective to tell when someone is deliberately betraying you. Granted, there's obvious signs, and it's just something that just naturally evolves over the iteration of multiplayer. So we'll definitely see improvements, but we'll definitely see issues, no doubt.
Well, also, if you're the only player who has inflicted damage on that person prior to betraying them, like, that kind of seems like a big sign to me that maybe you were trying to kill him on purpose, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's been times, especially on, like, Hemorrhage and back in Halo 2, Blood Gulch or you grab the sniper rifle on top of the base, and some idiot decides he wants the sniper rifle more than you do, so he starts shooting you in the head and then melees you. Like, that's infuriating, you know, because you grabbed the sniper rifle first. If they wanted it so bad, they should have got it first. And there's no reason to kill your own teammate.
I agree.
So, I mean, I hope that the algorithm for being able to boot your own teammates out is better in this game. But as far as that goes, the best thing you can do for that is just whenever you go into matchmaking, make sure you have a team of people you know. I mean, this stuff has been going on since Halo 2. I mean, back in Halo 2, it was even worse. You know, people would betray you for even, like, weapons that didn't matter, like
sword or rockets or a shotgun, even.
Yeah, you tried to grab a shotgun, and they would decide that they didn't like that very much, so they'd throw a grenade in your direction, then shoot you in the head, you know? I mean, it's always happened, so...
Yeah, and it's just going to be a problem. That's how...
So just make sure...
That's how all first-person shooters are, for the most part. So... Unless it's something like Call of Duty or Battlefield where you don't have weapon pickups on the map. Going to your second question, players helping players on the other team. I don't see that as much anymore. I get what you're saying. I mean, that happens when the party gets split up, so I don't think you can really do anything about that, to be honest. You want to read the next one?
Dodger125 says, writing to say that episode 310 was awesome, especially to hear Brent again.
Yay!
Will he be a permanent co-host? In any case, I hope that Daff stays on. I think you three will make an awesome podcast.
Hey, thanks, pal.
Oh, yeah. I like Daff.
G. Lewis is basically... Oh, thanks. I like you, too. And G. Lewis is basically, unfortunately, like, missing in action. I mean, I have no idea, right?
Hey, one-up yours was
one of the
most...
He's been posting on the forums, so...
Yeah, interesting. I mean, Dusty, don't you contact him? Like, what's going on with that? Come on.
I haven't talked to him in a while, actually.
Yeah. Is he coming back anytime soon, or?
I'm assuming if he works out his job situation that he would.
I hope so, because G. Lewis is one of the best hosts on here.
Four-man show, that'd make a good show.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. One Up Yours had four hosts, and it was one of the most popular gaming podcasts on the internet.
Three to four hosts for a podcast is pretty much the sweet spot for podcasting. If you guys ever do a podcast, you want to have three or four main hosts. That's your target. That's your target.
I don't know. Four can get a little, that's a bit much. Four's a crowd.
No, not for podcasting.
No, for podcasting.
There are a lot of podcasts that have four people on them.
We need to have 40 people on our
podcast.
Rooster
Teeth has four people on them. And they're like in the top five podcasts on iTunes.
Well, because of Rooster Teeth, I don't think them having four or three has a lot to do with it.
But the discussions that they have are still, it's three or, trust me, I've done podcasting for 4 years now.
I don't know, like, I listen to...
I've done podcasting for 4 years now.
One Up Yours had four people on it.
I'm not debating that. Let me just give my take on it. Not so much anymore. I still play a lot of WoW, but back in the day, I would listen to a lot of WoW podcasts, and those are pretty big themselves. And like I remember, for the longest time, the most popular one by like a long shot only had two guys on it. It's like it was just a back and forth, and they were like,
yeah.
Super
but
popular.
The thing is, you have two people, they have to really flow really well.
They had like really good chemistry. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we're quite that way with Podtacular.
Right. Maybe just with WoW, there's much more to talk about because it's so big. But
yeah.
All right.
Continuing
on with the submission from Dodger125. On the subject of Halo, I'm really excited about the objective aspect in war games. In past Halo games, I've normally played Slayer game types, but the changes and emphasis that 343 are putting on team play are making things like Capture the Flag and Oddball look very intriguing. 343 are doing a great job at keeping me excited. Keep up the good work and keep on fragging trucks.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah.
All right.
Are you excited for CTF, Dust?
I am excited for CTF. I think the changes that they made to it are really interesting. I like how it's a lot more team focused than individual skill. You want to read the next one, Daft?
Sure.
Duty Bound.
So for everyone out there, I have a huge rant to go on. For those of you who don't know, Dustrum loves the map Speed. He also loves the drug Speed, and as far as I know,
ha 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 ha.
Nobody does that anymore. That's such a '90s thing. Like, who does that? What an awful choice, kids. Don't do that. So he says, as far as I know, he is undefeated in that game on September 17th.
That's not true. I've been defeated in this game.
On September 17th, we've had our Monday Night Matchmaking. Shout out to all of you who come. We would love for all of you guys to come. So good old Dusty here put the map on. And my first comment was, I don't care who wins as long as it isn't Dust Storm. So the points are as follows. If you get a kill as a human, it's 1 point. If you get a kill as a zombie, it's 2 points. Round one, I get infected very early in the game and infect two people. By the end of the round, I have 5 points. Dusty has one. Round two, I start off as a zombie, and guess who I kill first? Duststorm. That's the worst thing I can do in that game, is make him a zombie first. Anyway, I infect 5 people. The score is now 16-4. Round three, I'm a zombie yet again, and I infect Dusty first. I infect 5 people, and the score is 27-8. Round four. Oh boy, he's got a lot of rounds here. Guess who's zombie again? Me. Guess who's infected first? Him. This is really pissing me off now. I get 4 kills. Score 36-15. Round 5, I'm finally in a car again. I get 1 splatter and 2 infections. Score 42-28. Round 6 ends in 48-33. Round 7, 52-50. Somehow Deathstorm caught up. Round 8, Dusty gets a splatter and is 1 point behind me. Then I'm infected and get a kill. Score is 54-52. Dusty ties it at 54 with an infection, and I'm getting really nervous that he's going to win. Thankfully, I got 1 last kill. Round ends with small 57-55 lead. The party is starting to cheer me on.
round 9, I get a short burst of energy with a 61-55 lead. However, the round ends in a 62-60 lead. Final round, this is what it all comes down to. My chance to finally see Deathstorm get beat in his favorite custom game. As I tried to hard hit my brakes to go slow and get infected, my efforts went in vain. I was hit, but only cosmetically, to my Warthog. After flipping, I blew up and had to spawn in a new car. As I looked at the score in my death screen, I saw a 62-62 tie. I was in full panic mode. I slammed my brakes and was infected after my second pass. It caused a splatter for me, and I was in the lead again by 1 point. Dusty got an infection, and I was losing by a point. He got another one soon after. I saw my win quickly disappearing. I heard the screams in my headphones to get another infection and beat Dusty. Unfortunately, I never got another kill, and I was beaten 69-64. I was so close. I will beat you, Deathstorm, I swear it. You know what that reminds me of at the end? With this so close. That reminds me of, like, in Pokemon. When you throw a Pokeball, it's like, I think, like, the second to last one or whatever, like, it breaks. Your trainer's like,
oh, yeah, he
shoot,
so close.
It was so close, too.
Yeah, so close.
Yeah.
You almost caught it.
Yeah, almost caught it. Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, the first one is like, oh, no, the Pokemon broke free.
Yeah. He gets more and more, yeah, desperate each time.
I will say, though, that for that game, I did not try to cheat at the end like he did, which I think is why I won, because I don't try to slow down. I just go full speed whenever I play that game. My goal isn't to try to get the most points. My goal is just to play the game type, and that's how I win.
That's a pretty fun game type. Like, it's like,
yeah,
it gets like euphoric. Like, you're just going so freaking fast.
I mean, it's nice when you're like up floating in the air and you actually just, you don't touch the ground at all.
You don't even touch your controller. You just keep, yeah, it's like you're going on your own at that point. Great, yeah.
Yeah, that's when it starts to get really interesting, because you physics, just get random just splatters.
Yeah.
And then it sucks when you, like, hit a corner or you run into someone else and you start just flipping out of control and bouncing off all the walls, and then you, like, commit suicide and self-destruct, and you have to go get a new vehicle. And by that time, there's already 5 or 6 other zombies out there, so you're like, oh well, get the Warthog, and by the time you get down there, you know you're screwed because one of them is bound to get you. So it's a lot of fun, though. It is definitely one of my favorite game types in Reach, and I have been defeated in that game type. I don't know if I've been defeated in Monday Night Matchmaking, but I have been defeated, so if that's any consolation. The next one is from Shadow, and he writes, "Hey, Potek, I've been wondering if there will be any elite armor customizations like the Spartans, or just have the classes like Reach does." Well,
no elites in Halo 4.
Yeah, figuring there's no elites, I don't think we're going to get any elite armor customizations. Don't think that's happening.
Maybe. I mean, you never know. 343 could change your mind.
They've said that there's not going to be any elites in multiplayer.
I know, but I'm saying, like, DLC later. Later in the game.
I doubt it.
I
doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too, but...
Yeah, they're not going to do that. They're just going to be too busy making, you know, sure that Halo 5 is an Xbox 720 launch title. Come on, guys.
It's not going to be a launch title. The dates don't
Dusty,
line up.
Yeah, Dusty, you're so against that idea.
The dates don't line up. Xbox...
Even though it's such a great... Like, it just works. It's just a great idea.
So you want to break the 3-year life cycle of Halo?
Yes, I want... Well, I mean, think about it. Halo 1
came
out on Xbox.
I think that's kind of done.
They're not
going
to do it.
Well, I mean, Halo 2 came out on Xbox. Never mind, but...
Dusty, I think the 3-year life cycle is kind of done. And not just for Halo, for other games. A lot of it, I think, is graphics. Like,
they've come out and said they're doing the 3-year life cycle for Halo.
They have?
Yeah.
It's good. I mean, but I just, like, how can they, in a way? Because it's like, you know what I mean? Like, games, like, they're looking better and better. And
Halo doesn't have to be a launch title.
No, but I'm talking about, like, the dev cycles now. Because, like, it's easy. Like, the technology can only get so good, I guess is what I'm saying. The technology can only get so good, so it's not going to take as long to make games, like sequels, as it used to. You see what I'm saying?
Dude, with the technology there, it still takes just as long. It's not about developing for the Xbox. It's about writing. It's about doing the graphics design. Like coding specifically for the Xbox 360 to 720 is not the big part of a development for a game. There's a lot of other things in there. There's the storyboards, there's that getting the actors, all the sounds. There's a lot that goes into it. That's the platform specific development is not that big of a part. It's significant, yes, but it's not that big.
Right. No, yeah, good for them for, you know, putting lots of work into it. I'm strongly of the opinion that, like, while they're making Halos 5 and 6 and whatnot, like, simultaneously, they need to, you know, be having other studios, like Robot and Certain Affinity, make, like, Halo Wars 2 and, like, Halo, you know, 2 HD and that kind of, like, side stuff.
They're going to make Halo Wars 2.
Probably.
They haven't officially said it, but they're making Halo Wars 2.
The Halo 2 HD has to be coming, like, sometime. Has to be. Halo 1 HD, I mean, I'd say that was a success, right?
So what's going to happen when they get to Halo 3? Are they going to be like, we're going to make Halo 3 HD?
They shouldn't do that.
I don't think so, because
they should only do 1 and 2, because those were the original Xbox ones.
But, I mean, there are ways to make Halo 3 look even better than it was.
Sure, but
But, I mean...
I would say, like, okay, pushing like...
it or...
I would say, like, graphics are only going to get so good. It's going to reach a point... technology-wise in the future of war, they just can't get any better. But on the scale of, like, quality of graphics...
That future is a good ways out.
I'm just saying, though, Halo 3, like, Halo 1 and 2, like, look very blocky and, like, eh. Halo 3, like, it still looks all right in general, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know if that's super necessary for Halo 3 to remake that.
Yeah, Halo 4 just looks like Halo 3 and Halo Reach. I don't know why they just change it into, like...
You want to read the next one, Brent?
Yes. GameDude03 says, "Hey guys, first off, I wanted to say that I love listening to your podcast when I'm forging in Reach. It's my favorite time to just sit down and play Halo. Anyway, I saw the Halo 4 Covenant weapons video, and it was awesome. But the one thing that bugged me was that the returning weapons, excluding the carbine and the sword, looked like the models from Reach. Now I'm not sure if that's the build that they showed, or if they're just lazy. Probably not. But just wanted to get your thoughts about it. Thanks, guys. Lol, keep on fragging those trucks."
To me, the weapons look significantly different.
The HUDs look different, for sure.
Well, yeah, the HUDs are definitely different. The weapon models themselves, from playing the game, they're definitely different than they are in Reach.
Yeah. But, I mean, at some point, you get to where you can't iterate on it anymore, you know? I mean...
No, I know. I know.
Bungie did a great job on 3D models for weapons in Halo Reach. I mean, the one thing that you can't say about Halo Reach is that that game looked terrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, when it came out, everybody's like, "Yeah, it just looks like Halo 3." And when Halo 3 came out, everybody's like, "Yeah, this just looks like Halo 2." I mean, it didn't work that way with Halo 2 because that game looked completely different than Halo 1, but
yeah.
It has a certain art style, and I don't think people appreciate that. Well, Halo has a certain style, and it can't really deviate from that style.
Right.
Without looking completely different.
Well, so this is a line from the bulletin that they included about the weapons for the Covenant weapons. "On the aesthetic side, we feel that the shiny textures, bright colors, and flawless models of the past made them read a bit too toy-like, so we tried to make everything slightly more grounded. We did that by showing more wear and tear, such as scuffs and imperfections, and using new textures that made the guns look like they were created from hard metallic alloys instead of plastic." So, for the most part, yeah, like the design of the weapons look pretty much the same, but the actual visual feel is significantly different, I think. Daft, last one.
Okay. Let me get this. Ghost Chili says, "Oh, by the way, Ghost Chili, I think this is the guy in the forums with the Hank Hill avatar, which is awesome. King of the Hill is a great show, I must say.
I have seen King of the Hill at least 3 times over, every episode. No joke."
Yeah, it's a great show, yeah. "I saw propane and propane accessories."
That boy ain't right.
I didn't know there was propane accessories.
Yeah. It's what my dad always said. He's like, what the hell does he mean by propane accessory? It's like, what does that even mean?
Okay.
It's funny, on a side note, I remember in one episode, they were at his work, the propane place. They were having like a legitimate argument about whether like a grilling like apron should be considered an accessory or apparel.
It's obviously apparel. It can't be an accessory.
Yeah, it's apparel.
Yeah, you're going to wear it for a fashion statement. So, Ghost Chili says, sup, Pod Deck. Ghost Chili here to give out my thoughts on the new weapons. First off, I've always disliked the Covenant weapons and mostly liked the UNSC weapons because I like a more human feel to my weapons. I know what he means. But after seeing the new weapons video, I'm excited. I'll start with the Storm Rifle, which seems compatible to the Saw. Then there's the... I don't know about that.
No, it's more like the Assault Rifle.
Saw, yeah, that's all it is.
Yep. And they've come out and said that.
There is no like Covenant Saw, really, right?
No, there's not.
There's not. Covenant getting the short end of the stick this time around. He says, then there's the Plasma Pistol, which looks like it's been beefed up to be able to compete with the human pistol. The new carbine also looks great and sounds better than from Halo 3 and is now less annoying. The fuel rod also looks like it fires faster, and I'm extremely happy that it doesn't bounce now. I remember the reaction. The fuel rod
bounces.
Yeah, it bounces. The fuel rod
bounces.
Yeah, it was bouncing in that video.
Yeah, sorry. The fuel rod bounces.
Yeah. It's like the Scout from TF2, right? Bonk, right?
A little bit.
I remember the reactions from Halo 3 when they had it bounced. It seemed like a Halo 2 hybrid, in my opinion. It actually seems compatible with the human rockets. My only dislikes are really to the sound of the concussion rifle and the beam rifle, which have both been tuned down sound-wise. I don't know if it is the music or the weapons, but I don't like their sound. But overall, the new upgrades, I feel, seem to have fixed small issues with old weapons, and I think 343 did a good job of tuning up the old weapons for Halo 4. Like the guys from Halo Council said, 343 did a good job of covering all the avenues on people's gripes and desires for the game and for the new Forward Unto Dawn series, which is way overdue. Oh, and I listened to the last episode while playing Halo 3's Cortana on Legendary. This was because a friend of mine misplaced my campaign disc a while ago when I was about to start it on my new account a few years ago, and he finally found it. That mission was on my hit list, and I found it ironic hearing you guys talking about it. I'm also really pleased that the Flood isn't in Halo 4. I mean, do we know that? That could be a twist at the end, right? Is that confirmed? We
pretty much.
What a twist.
What a twist. They haven't specifically said that the Flood isn't in the game, but with the Prometheans in there, why have four different classes of enemies, right?
Why not?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Spartan Ops? I would not imagine campaign would have Flood.
We don't know that, right? I mean,
I don't think they've come out and specifically said no Flood.
Yeah. Thing is,
although, wait. I think I remember Frankie saying that, actually.
No Flood?
No Flood in campaign. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I could totally see them doing?
It might have been at the Rooster Teeth event.
Yeah, you know what I could totally see them doing is, keeping on with Spartan Ops, like, all through Halo 4, like up to Halo 5, basically. And they could, like how Mass Effect 3, you know, Mass Effect had that Arrival DLC to build up to Mass Effect 3. Like, they could do, like really late in Halo 4's lifespan, they could do Spartan Ops with, like, Flood in them or something to kind of build up to Halo 5.
I have no doubt there will be Spartan Ops DLC.
Yeah, but, like, to build up to Halo 5, maybe, like, if Halo 5 was going to have Flood in it, they could have some, you know what I mean, kind of a taste, like a preview in Halo 4 Spartan Ops to help build up to, like, the Flood, like, fully debuting, you know, in Halo 5 all over again kind of thing.
Hey, maybe.
Yeah. Anyway, so this guy says, so yeah, sorry for the long submission. Thanks for reading. P.S. Thanks, Daft, for reading my old submission that has already been read on an earlier episode a month ago before the submission show that Daft read twice in the course of a recent episode. No biggie.
Oops.
Thanks.
There's some submission overlap, I guess. Oh, well.
Yeah, well.
I've got an idea.
What's your idea?
Okay. What if you don't put the Flood in Halo 4, but instead you make them green and you rename them the Tsunami?
All right.
Technically, the Flood wouldn't be in Halo 4.
That's really, really stretching it. But you have a point. You have a point. So.
Oh.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. This has been episode 312 of PodTackler. Remember, you can check us out at podtackler.com. And while you're there, check out our forums.
Oh, guys, I'm glad we got this done by 7:45.
Hey, it's 7:45 Mountain Time in 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So we did get it done by 7:45 in half the country. the U.S. Sorry for our overseas listeners. It was done by, like, what, 4:45 the next day? So, yeah, make sure you check out our forums. Make sure you check out Monday Night Matchmaking. If you're looking for a reason to get back into Halo Reach for upcoming Halo 4, this is definitely a good reason to come out. We start at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on every Monday. And we usually go about 3 hours or so. We'll start off with matchmaking, usually do a little bit of big team, and then head on over to some customs after everyone is kind of tired out with that. And we'll play speed for our first game.
I'm thinking about showing up for the next Monday night matchmaking.
Yeah, you should do that. Awesome,
if I can find some way to get back on Xbox Live. I don't have XBL gold right now, but I think I can find a way. So,
are you going to have gold by Halo 4?
Yeah, I'm going to have it by Halo 4, but...
Okay, that's good.
I might show up.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe we're, like, less than 2 months away.
It's weird, right?
From November 6th. Like, you think Halo 4 is, like, you know, a long time away? No, it's tomorrow.
Okay,
it's
right now I'm stopping you. No, that joke's old now. that joke's old. So also, make sure you send us submissions about anything that we've been talking about. I'm still working on the new voicemail. Sorry about that, but we will get that up as soon as we can. I will try to let you guys know about it on the next show. Also, you can check us out on iTunes soon, what is it now? It's Xbox Music, but is there like a podcast name for it?
I have
no
clue.
It's not Zune anymore.
Zune is dead. Thanks a lot, Microsoft.
Yeah, there you go. Zune's dead.
I don't even know what it's called anymore.
I bought a Zune on launch date.
Did you really?
So thank a lot. I'm just mad at Microsoft, you know? You know, just leave me out for...
Well, I mean, so how many times have they gone through a renaming of that service?
How many times have they renamed all of their services? I mean, they used to have, like, .NET, and now it's, like, Microsoft account or whatever. And...
Well, it used to be MSN Music.
Yeah, and Microsoft needs to figure out what they're going to do. They need to get all their stuff together. They need to figure out... I don't know.
Well, they still have Zune. I guess Zune might just be the PC equivalent, and then Xbox Music.
Do you guys want to hear a joke? iPhone 5.
I don't get it.
Hey, everyone go on the forums and go over to the computers board. We have a hilarious Microsoft /Apple thread.
I'm just saying that joke would have more significance if Apple didn't have more money than any other corporation on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, really, at any given moment, Apple could just spend all of their money and make the greatest device on the planet.
And they try to patent for everything.
I know.
Which is one of the reasons why I don't like Apple.
I don't like Apple that much.
The only Apple product I have is an iPod, and I won't buy anything else.
Albert Einstein working in the patent office, right? The guy just comes up, I got my patents, and Albert Einstein just slams the thing on him and just steals the patents. And...
It's ridiculous. But back on topic, make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We are facebook.com/podtacular. We are twitter.com/podtacular. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel, which is podtacular.com/podtactv. And we put videos up there on a regular basis. We'll be doing one for the Halo 4 Covenant Weapons video that just came out. I'll be doing an analysis on that one here in a couple of days. So make sure you check that out. Also, any donations that you guys are willing to put forward is much appreciated. There's a donate button on our homepage that you can do. Any amount will help go towards hosting bills for the site. It is not free, as many people may think. So it is quite pricey to host Podtacular on a yearly basis, but we do it anyways for you guys. But if you feel like you want to donate, we would appreciate it, any amount that you're willing to give. Hopefully we will be looking at bringing up a store as well. I did manage to give out some t-shirts at PAX, so I will be looking to possibly make those available to people that you can buy them at in the store. So hopefully that comes out pretty soon as well. I think that's all I have to say. Thank you guys for listening, and we will catch you guys next week.
Thank you, everybody. Listen to us next
guys.
Week, please.
Yeah.
Hopefully by next week we'll have even more Halo 4 information to give you.
Yeah, remember, make sure to come to Monday Night Matchmaking
every week
on Monday.
Yes,
so
it is
when
Monday.
Is when is Monday Night Matchmaking? By the way, what night is that on?
It's on. I think it's Monday.
Is it Tuesday?
Maybe Sunday. I don't know.
Is it on Hump Day?